Three sons rise over and rule a virtual world, and a slave and a soldier conspire against a tyrannical empire. Those are the settings for the two novels we'll dip into with our fantasy and science fiction reviewer, George Williams. Good morning, George.
Good morning.
Now, let's start with An Ember in the Ashes. It's touted as a successor to The Hunger Games, to The Game of Thrones even. Sabaa Tahir's debut novel. It's already... The movie rights have already been snapped up. This is a blockbuster in the making, it would appear.
Well, it's certainly one that's surrounded by a lot of hype, and I think it's more Hunger Games than Game of Thrones. It really is directed at the young adult market, and what you've got here is a love story that's built up in a brand new world involving a bit of a Roman crossover with the Middle East, where you've got a group of scholars who've been oppressed by a new culture, the Romans, if you like. And at the heart of this story is one of these oppressed people who's seeking to resist, to spark a revolution, and the relationship that she forms with one of the soldiers. And that love story is at the heart of it, but it's a brutal story involving oppression, slavery, and all sorts of things that capture the imagination and get the heart pumping very quickly.
Sabaa Tahir, quite interesting. Born in London, grew up in the Mojave Desert in California.
Yeah, look, she does. She's got an interesting background, and she's one of the new generation of really very good young female writers coming through in the fantasy field. And for a long time, people have described fantasy and science fiction as being dominated by men, a very masculine area where you didn't get the same attention, perhaps on characterisation and the same plots and romance. But really, that's all changed, and The Hunger Games was certainly part of that. But this is, again, part of that new wave of really exceptional young female writers, and it's very easy to see why this has been snapped up as a movie. It's made for cinema, but equally why it's been so successful as a book. People who like this genre and these sort of characterisations are really going to lap this one up.
And what do you think has done, what do you think Sabaa Tahir has done to set this book apart? There's a pack of, popular fantasy titles out there. What's so different about this particular novel?
Well, I think in this case, there's much that when I came to it, I thought, well, it really didn't strike me as one that would stand out from the pack. It's a bit derivative and having a love triangle at the centre of the story. And much of the plotting in some ways is what you'd expect from this book. But I think what really makes this work more than the others is that the plot itself is truly exceptional. It is a plot that really grabs you early. It has some really good twists and turns in it. The fact that it infuses the world with some Middle Eastern culture as well is a nice departure from what we often see. And indeed, here it's not the romance at the heart that really drives the story, surprisingly. In fact, that's often a bit more low-key than you'd normally expect, and it's less convincing than some of the other elements. So I think it's an exercise in world-building that really does work well, and a brutal, unforgiving regime that really does pose some interesting and really quite compelling stories that the author bears out well.
You touched on the detail in her rendering of this fantasy world. It's a departure from the kind of medieval aesthetic that's so common in fantasy, very much rooted in Europe.
Well, it is, and it either tends to be a medieval or throw in a few elves and orcs with a bit of a Tolkien influence, and you can divide much of the fantasy world of the past into one of those two things. But this certainly doesn't fit into that category at all. It is a story about revolution, of overthrowing an oppressive system, a system where you've had Roman influences colonising the Middle Eastern. And that is quite different. It is quite distinctive. And you do see here a real effort to draw out the different cultures involved. And what that does is give a real depth to this that you don't often find. And it's good to see that no effort has been made just to copy those middle European settings. So there's no knights and armour in this. It's one that's quite different, a real desert landscape. And it's quite refreshing, I think, and really good to see that this author has proven to be so skilled in making it work and really making it stand out from other like novels.
Refreshing in its depiction of tyranny. I mean, so many of us are obsessed with this. Well, I think Game of Thrones really bears this out. The depiction of tyranny is, well, it makes for very good reading.
Well, it certainly does, and you know, Game of Thrones demonstrates that we can even end up barracking for the bad guy sometimes, and also that it can be very hard to know who is good and bad in these novels, and the adult of these novels, like the Game of Thrones, tends to really throw a shade of grey over almost all of the characters. That's not the true here, and in fact, in the young adult, a key difference is you tend to have sharper divisions, and here it's pretty clear who are the good guys, even though there certainly are some hard decisions they have to make, and it's not all good and evil. But I think a key distinguishing characteristic is you can identify much more clearly and directly with these characters, because you really do hope they're going to be successful in overthrowing this regime, and you don't have some of the complexities that you have, say, in the Game of Thrones.
It is billed as young adult, but who do you think is going to read this novel, Ember in the Ashes?
Well, certainly it does work for that young adult audience, even though it's quite brutal in parts. It's nowhere near of a kind that you do find in some of the darker modern fantasies like Game of Thrones. So I think it's a really good novel for teenagers and beyond. But what this genre has really opened up is adults who like young adult. And in fact, of course, many of the most avid readers of Hunger Games and the like tend to be adults, people like myself. And this young adult novel certainly will appeal to that broader audience. And if you're someone who likes looking at younger characters in these sort of settings with good world building, then you know, this, like the Hunger Games, certainly deserves to be a hit.
I like this phrase, world building. Of course, it's something that Tolkien did in his novels, and writers create these fantasy empires, and people want to inhabit them.
Well, they do, and there's nothing quite like the escapism involved in a brand new world, I think. And for me, that's often one of the great appeals of fantasy. I mean, I enjoy fiction generally, but when I read, I really do want to be transported somewhere else. And the skill of an author in this area is just how quickly they can get you to suspend disbelief, throw in a bit of magic, as they do here, without you thinking it's just gone over the top. So the real skill, as Tolkien showed, was can they really get you to fully inhabit this world that is so different from your own, and in a way that really transports you into a brand new story, a brand new plot, and a brand new set of characters.
Daniel Browning with you on Books and Arts. We're hearing from George Williams, our sci-fi and fantasy reviewer. Let's move on. The Three-Body Problem by the Chinese author Sir Xin Liu. Can you start by telling us what is the three-body problem?
Well, this certainly is a very different book. This is a hard science fiction book, a hard science book, and at its heart is a problem of orbital mechanics. How do you predict the paths of three bodies? For example, in our context, the Sun, the Moon, and the Earth. And predicting the orbits of three bodies is incredibly difficult because it builds in a chaotic, unpredictable element. And in our case, it's not such an issue because of those three bodies. But just imagine you lived on a world where those three bodies were suns, and you were never quite sure whether it would be one, two, or three suns that might bear over the horizon each morning, because whether it was one, two, or three would determine whether you lived a day or an era that was livable and possible, or an era that was so hot that all life would be exterminated. And so it's dealing here with that problem in a way that throws up not just an issue for a different planet in our universe, but bears ultimately upon the future of humanity.
This is the first major release of Chinese science fiction in English. Do you feel Liu's in touch with the sci-fi that's normally sold here, or perhaps he's walking a different path? What do you reckon?
Well, he certainly has many of the familiar themes of the best science fiction from Western science fiction. I mean, it's hard science made accessible in intriguing, wonderful plots that open up really mind-bending ideas. And, for example, he's got an idea in this book of a computer that's made out of not of mechanical components, but 30 million human beings. Could you construct them and move them around in the way that replicates the actions of a computer? Or the idea of nanoparticles as a weapon in modern warfare. And these are plots and themes that you could find in science fiction, but they're realised exceptionally well here. What you do see as different here is not just the Chinese names, but really the story is embedded in a beginning in the Cultural Revolution in China in 1967. And the whole plot is driven by a person's reaction to those extreme events and her witnessing the brutal beating to death of her father, who refuses to give up in his belief in science. And that event really shapes the plot that goes from there. And her witnessing that and that shaping her character is something that affects not only her, but ultimately the fate of humankind.
Now, it's been billed as a War of the Worlds for the 21st century as we wind up, George. What's your reaction to that?
Oh, look, this undoubtedly is going to be a classic. And if anything, I'm disappointed it's so long to get to us. It was the winner of the best novel in Chinese science fiction about a decade ago. It's taken a long time to get to us, but it really does, I think, amount to arguably, I think, the best science fiction novel so far I've read this year.
George, thank you so much. George Williams is our science fiction and fantasy reviewer. Thank you.
Pleasure.
George is also a professor at UNSW Law, and today he was talking about The Three-Body Problem by Cixin Liu and translated by Ken Liu, and The Ember, and An Ember, rather, in the Ashes by Sabati here. Both titles are out on HarperCollins.